Welcome to National Living Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, October 20th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you are listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab, top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where last week we started in the book of Ephesians. This week we'll be reading chapter 2, the book of Ephesians, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 2. And you hath he quickened, who were dead in trespasses and sins, wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also we all had our conversation in times past, in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. But God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, hath quickened us together with Christ, by grace ye are saved, and hath raised us up together, and made us sit together in heavenly places in Christ Jesus, that in the ages to come he might show the exceeding riches of his grace in his kindness toward us through Christ Jesus. For by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them. Wherefore remember that ye, being in time past Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by that which is called the circumcision in the flesh made by hands, that at that time ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope, and without God in the world. But now, in Christ Jesus, ye who sometimes were far off are made nigh by the blood of Christ. For he is our peace, who hath made both one, and hath broken down the middle wall of partition between us, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, even the law of commandments contained in ordinances, for to make in himself of twain one new man, so making peace, and that he might reconcile both unto God in one body by the cross, having slain the enmity thereby, and came and preached peace to you which were afar off, and to them that were nigh. For through him we both have access by one Spirit unto the Father. Now therefore ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints, and of the household of God, and are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Jesus Christ himself being the chief cornerstone, in whom all the building fitly framed together groweth unto an holy temple in the Lord, in whom ye also are builded together for an habitation of God through the Spirit.
John, if you're talking, okay, I can't hear you.
Yeah, I was muted. Hey, Jan, do we have any questions tonight? Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome. John, by the way, quick question. I couldn't make last Monday. Did you discuss where there might be other indictments against the judges other than the two Judge Kahn indictments? Remember, I have someone asking about that. They want to see other indictments, the paperwork.
Yeah, I haven't had the ability or the chance to do anything about that. You know, I had a complete shutdown of my computer. I mean, total crash. And I was down for 5 days, and I got back up last weekend, I think it was, and I've been so busy catching up, I forgot all about it. But what exactly was it I need to do to look for? We had to look for the indictments for Judge Khan, K-A-A, how do you spell that, do you know?
K-A-H-N, Judge Khan, I believe, is what.
Okay, and another judge? I mean, which case was this, do you recall? Was it just indictments for them denying maybe a habeas corpus or due process or something? Do you know?
Yeah, yes. The it's the, on the drop down, it's the grand jury docket. When we looked at this 2 weeks ago, I think, and if you scroll down a little, you'll see Judge Khan's second indictment, and I think the other one's here as well, the first one. And those two are available, but then there's a whole list, if you scroll down a little farther, of judges that have, for denial of due process and felony rescue, and then there's a whole list of judges. I believe that's what this NLA member is looking for, is more paperwork. The paperwork.
I'll have to look for that. And if I didn't put it up, then what I may do is put all of them up in one shot. You'd have to scroll through them, and in opposed to putting them up one at a time. But we'll see. Let me see what I can find and put together.
Okay, great. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, thanks. All right, Jan, do we have any questions tonight? You're muted if you're talking. Anybody hearing Jan?
I am not.
Well, Terry, do you know if we have any questions tonight? Well, he looks like he's muted right now.
I think the mute turned off and on a few times. Maybe he's having an issue.
Yeah, I'll try to unmute him on this end.
Can you hear me now, John?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, we have one question tonight. And that is, have you considered identifying existing, quote, freedom-oriented YouTubers with large audiences like Lewis Rossman, for example, and putting them onto the NLA strategy? What method for expanding your audience, provided you can get heard amidst all the other comments, then repeat as necessary?
Yeah, well, you know, I have tried to get a hold of quite a few different individuals. You know, we used to do a lot of interviews a while back, and we did a lot of radio and different things. And I'll tell you, I've been trying to get a hold of a lot of different people on YouTube and on Rumble. I was trying to connect with Dave, for instance, with X22. Never been able to connect with him. A whole bunch of people, but I just never get through to any of these people. But if anybody has any connections, as a matter of fact, this is something that our entire membership should be working on, at least going out to see if they can connect with whoever they listen to, whether they're listening to their news, whether it be on YouTube or some other channels, doesn't matter, and kind of make a connection for us. And if you can make that connection, get that information to Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org, and then he would make direct contact with that individual, first contact, and then set up an arrangement for me to go onto their program and talk about government by consent. You know, our program, of course, is extremely important. You know, we say every Monday that what NLA is doing is to try to save the republic. You know, I know Trump is doing a great job in his administration, but they lack certain things. They lack certain knowledge, I think. Maybe they know things that I don't realize that they know because I just haven't heard them talking about it. Or they use the word democracy instead of republic. That's a big problem. But hopefully as time goes on, they'll figure that out. We had communications with them recently and sent them. As a matter of fact, You know, I had a computer meltdown, so I never even got to put up the latest papers we sent, which was a presentment to President Trump, A.G. Bundy, and Patel, Cash Patel, and particularly focusing in, well, on quite a few problems. I mean, you know, the main focus was really on the assassination of Lavoy Finicken, but also a big focus took the opportunity to focus in on the problem with the courts, and that we need to save our courts. And if we don't save our courts, then we can't save America. And Trump cannot save America. Nobody can save America if our courts are not saved. If we don't get our courts of justice back, then America is lost, and will never be found again. Once we get to a certain point, we almost reached that point. Thank God, Trump, avoided that problem, and is really, you know, doing a lot of work to bring us back to where we belong. But it's up to the people to save America. It's up to the people to save the republic. Only the people can do that. You know, we have government by consent. And if the people don't know how to consent, if they don't know how to have government by consent, if they don't know the Constitution, they don't understand the powers and the authorities that our representatives have, and to recognize when they have violated that trust. And, I'll tell you what, I'd be very surprised if 1 out of 10, I'd probably say 1 out of 100, that's how bad it is, 1 out of 100 representatives, at all level of offices, whether it be local individuals elected to some power, or, you know, the state or even federal level, if 1 out of 100 know the Constitution, I'd even be surprised if there was that many of them, because they're totally ignorant to the Constitution. And if they do know the Constitution, and they do understand it, then they're guilty of treason, and they need to be hung. Anyway, it's up to the people to save America. It's up to us to take back our courts, and only by working with committees of safety and getting the word out. You know, we don't, let me see how many committees of safety we have going. We haven't been really getting a lot of new committees of safety going for a while. But in process right now, we have, if you look on the right-hand side of our website, you'll find, these numbers. And one of it is we have 206 county committees of safety in process. We have a little over 3,100 counties. We have 3,133 counties, to be exact. That changes from time to time, but that's what it is at this point, 3,133 counties. We need to get at least three-quarters of those counties moving in order to really have the power and the authority. Maybe we don't even need that many. But the bottom line is that we have government not by the majority, but by the majority that participates. And, this entire government really is controlled and operated by about 4 or 5 individuals in every county. That's what it takes, and that's what they're doing. You know, I mean, they have a lot of committeemen that they control and have to go out to walk the papers to get these people onto the ballot, the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left. Doesn't make a difference. They don't do any recalls. All these parties do is just fight and debate and argue against each other about things they shouldn't even be talking about, that they have no authority to talk about at all. To debate our rights, debate our Second Amendment, our First Amendment, and the many, many things that they do and talk about, the money that they give away to people without power, without authority. By what authority do they operate and do these things? They have none. And yet the people don't realize it. They don't know. And, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorant inaction. And even worse than that, we the people being ignorant and don't even realize what they're doing. If we have about 3,000 counties and we can get maybe 40 or 50 people in each one of those counties, we're looking at about 120,000 people to take back our republic. And that's doable very easily. The only way we're really going to do this is to get critical mass. We have to get the word out there and get critical mass going. And critical mass, you know, there's numerous ways. Again, me going out and talking to people on YouTube, those who have, especially those people who have a lot of members, a lot of people following them. We need to get the word out to as many people as possible, and I think we'll get a real good response. So again, anybody, everybody should do this. Look for some people that you listen to. Try to make contact with them. Tell them a little bit about National Liberty Alliance. Give them the website, and you know, make that connection and get that information to Jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll get going on interviews and conversations to get the word out. You know, our nation is as just as our courts. The way our nations deal with other nations is just as just as our courts are. You know, Trump is out there making peace and trying to get things back together again where we'd be trading with other countries and opposed to fighting them. You know, the United States has really been the big problem of the world, secretly speaking, through the CIA and other agencies. They have betrayed we the people. They are the cause of all of the problems in the Middle East. They created those problems and created those groups and those people. Trump realizes that. Trump's trying to fix that problem. And a lot of people in these different nations or countries, you know, they're interested in stopping the fighting. But it's the evil in control of their countries that we, the United States of America, not we the people, but our government put these people in power and authority and maintain control and get all these things going, because there's a lot of money in war. And after all, they want to reduce the population of the world, because after all, they truly believe they own this world and we're just a problem to them. but we can fix it. Just get the word out to as many people. And people should be bringing people to our meetings here where people can ask questions. You know, next Wednesday, I'm planning on going to speak to a group, and I understand it's a pretty large group, so hopefully, you know, we'll get some things going in a county next door to where my county is, Dutchess County. And, you know, I'm willing to go anywhere to talk to anybody to get the word out. You know, my traveling abilities is limited, but I can always do some kind of, you know, thing through Zoom or something with an organization anywhere in the country. Any group of people, county, that want to get a county committee of safety going, you know, I could talk to them through Zoom or whatever kind of a platform that they may put together for me to come on and talk to these people and introduce them to, you know, government by consent, to what we're doing here at National Liberty Alliance, and, you know, and answer their questions. But it's up to us to do this. Again, we have government by the consent of the people. And if the people are not busy consenting and they do not know how to have, people do not know how to have government by consent. They just lack that knowledge because it was never given to them. And but we have to step up. We have to learn it, and we have to do it. Otherwise, because liberty is not going to defend itself, our Constitution with its Bill of Rights is not going to defend itself. Ourselves, our law is completely destroyed. We are under civil law, Roman law, which is Babylonian law, law of the city. With the purpose of that law is to control the people and fleece the people, take as much money as they can from them, put people in jail. There's a lot of money in putting people in jail. And that's not who we are. People in power especially, parties are destructive. They do not recognize, nor do they want to recognize, that we are a Christian nation and that God is the king of the court, not these individuals that we elected or have been appointed for certain positions. They don't rule over us. God rules over us through the law. But they rule over us instead, because they closed the doors of justice, and they rule over us through their civil law courts, and they control us. And so only the people can save the republic. Donald Trump cannot save this republic. No man can save this republic. He can bring it back on track and give it. Matter of fact, he said, "I was not elected to take power. I was elected to take power and give it back to the people. So it's up to you to take that power and you to do something for, you know, our nation, that you know, for yourself and your posterity." All right. Anyway, Jan, what do we got?
Can you hear me, John?
Yep, I can hear you.
I did have one other about page of material was sent in as a question, but I read through it and there weren't any questions in it. So that's all the questions that we have for tonight.
Okay. All right. Thank you much. By the way, our queue is open. If you're on a phone, it's a *6 and a 1. If you have, if you're on an app or a browser, you can hit the button. There should be a button there to enter into the queue. So we have two people in the queue right now. If anybody wants to get in there, now is the time to do that. So we'll take our first caller, I guess. Hang on. Oh, hang on a minute. Let me think about this. I think there was something else I wanted to share or go through quickly. No, maybe not. Okay. All right, we'll take our first caller. Let me get that button. Okay, this is Anonymous. Can you give us your first name and your state? You got the mic, Anonymous.
Thank you. I hope you can hear me.
Yeah,
my name is Elizabeth. I'm in Arizona. And I just wanted to, first of all, just comment just briefly and then ask Mike, I'll talk some more. You know, the thing about the promotional part of this, it's got to be people who are hurting and have some consciousness of, you know, that there is a way to do this, but it's really about really, really, really relying on God and not just, you know, a convenient kind of thing. And I mean, a lot of those people in social media, they, I don't know, but there might be 1 out of 1,000 that might want to do this, you know, might have a need, you know. So, yeah, I think it's good to try and find people. But, you know, I had to find you. And so I'm studying, and it's a little bit difficult for me because I'm not used to reading this kind of literature as much. And but I'm pushing myself, and then I'm kind of resting. But you know, I I'm not through with the introduction, because the introduction really needs to be looked at closely in my view. And so then I found this writ mandamus that you have there, and I downloaded it, I printed it, and I'm getting the videos. But, you know, that reading that, it really helps me understand the introduction better. There's a lot of things that are discussed in there that are in the introduction, and it gives me more, kind of broadens my interest in it and helps me understand, because I am interested. It's just... you know, I'm still stuck a bit on the equity, because I was taught that equity was like admiralty. But I'm understanding now that, you know, the equity can be there as long as it's in line with the common law. And I appreciate your encouragement to read, because that's what's going to work. That's what's working. And just relax about it and not try to remember it. Because a lot of it I kind of know in my common sense, you know, but in terms of the facts and the structure of what I need to, you know, I mean, I'm not sure how this is going to work, but I'm not the director, you know, you know, I'm not here for a mistake. It's not a mistake, and I have to do this. So, and that's the thing, like, I really believe that our people really need to understand the desperate need we do have to do this. And if people are having a hard time right now, that's a gift, because then they'll start looking up and, you know, God help me, you know, how can I do that? What can I do? And you know, this whole thing is about the truth, and it's about the real God, not the commercial God, you know, and I mean, it's just awful. And, you know, it's almost no wonder why people don't want anything to do with God, because so many of the institutions out there have turned him into a Mickey Mouse cartoon or something. And it's not even in the realm. I mean, they're in the book of Proverbs, Psalms, it's around Psalms 10, I think. It talks about how God's view of things is so much greater than the man of the earth, you know, and that they're talking about Satan, they're talking about the Antichrist, you know, and because as long as I'm in this flesh, I'm easy to impress if I'm not strong. And this kind of thing is not a flashy thing. It's not impressive. It's deep and it's lovely, but it's also painful, you know, to read this stuff and see how they handled us, you know, and they threw us around and how they treated my parents. You know, it's just terrible what they did and what they're still doing. And I'm sorry, but it's really a tragedy. And yet this is, we're in my view, this is judgment from God. I mean, he's starting to come off his throne, I think, and wants our attention. So, anyway, I'm very grateful, and I'm just moved about it, and I'll just keep reading. And I wanted to ask one thing, because the other day I was on the mandamus, and I don't even know what mandamus means yet. I read it, but I don't remember it yet. But then it's got the memorandums, and the video I watched was like 2 to 3 hours long. And you went through the writ, and then you went through 3 of the memorandums, and then that was enough. You know, that was like, wow, that was like 2 to 3 hours. And then I went looking for that today, and I didn't find it. But it looks like you've done some work on it, and it's split up into 19 different videos. Is that the same video that I was seeing before?
Well, again, I don't know how many videos I had done on different mandamuses. I might have done quite a few. I just don't remember. Look at probably the best things to read. You know, and again, you learn about law through reading, and common law is just common sense. You mentioned that you read through a writ of mandamus. I don't know which one, what it was.
It was the one for the high treason for the United States. It was.
Okay.
There was the writ, and then you went into the memorandums, and you know, abrogation of the law of the land. What was the second one? There were 3 of them.
A lot of those memorandums you'll find in the book Government by Consent, and uh-huh. If you're interested in that book, you can get that.
Yeah.
You can find it under the welcome page. You come down to books by John Duresh.
Uh-huh.
And you'll see the books. And Government by Consent is the first book I wrote. It's really the biggest focus we have here at National Liberty Alliance.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we do have a Christian focus also. We have Bible studies on Tuesday, on Wednesday evenings at 7:30 for people interested in that right here in this room. We're in
uh-huh.
the Gospel of John. So I've gotten books on some books also on Bible studies in here. But Government by Consent, it's 550 pages, and it's got a lot of memorandums in there, memorandums of law. And when you read through them, you'll see that it's just common sense. It's just simple common sense. There's no statutes and regulations and anything of that nature. It's just common sense of who we are. You know, truth is self-evident, and we're under the laws of nature and of nature's God. And that brings us to maxims, truths that cannot be denied. The Declaration of Independence, okay, makes that point. We have government by consent, and that we are under the laws of nature and of nature's God. All men is created equal. That's a maxim. That's a truth. Cannot be denied. Men are created equal. It is true some people have more appreciation abilities on this or that or something else, but in our heart and in our soul, we're all equal. Knowledge is a different thing altogether. So I would say anybody really wanting to try to learn this stuff is that book, Government by Consent, and just start from the beginning and read through because it covers so much. And it's all about the law. You know, our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. And if you don't know the law, you can't really know all your liberty. Neither do the people that are in power know what our liberty is. You know, they are one of the requirements of government that we set forth in the Constitution, where we the people ordained and established. One of those points was for them to secure the blessings of liberty. That's their job, to secure the blessings of liberty. And of course, that's the foundation of our law, found in the Declaration of Independence, which is a covenant with God. And so it's the declaration, it is the foundation of our law, it's the foundation of who we are as a people. And it lays out the foundation of our court. And in the Constitution, of course, the law and equity is the law of the land. The word law, L-A-W, means exactly that, natural law, common law. There are 51 different laws or inequity, that is, laws and equity listed in Black's Law Dictionary, for instance, 51. And 50 of them are, you know, different legislative laws, but one is the law, which is God's law. And that's what we're under. But go ahead.
That's interesting because all we need is one.
That's it?
We don't need 50. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Well, again, you got to remember, that's the laws of the nations. You know, the Black's Law covers the laws throughout the whole world, all the different laws that people, that different nations might hold. We, of course, hold up to equity, and our equity has to be in alliance with natural law. And as a matter of fact, the rules of positive law, by the way, equity, which is legislative law, which is also referred to as positive law, and the word equity means justice, that which is just, and that's what it's supposed to be, a just law. And a just law is under the rules of common law or the rules of natural law. And that law, of that, those rules require a harmony with the laws of nature and of nature's God. And that's why we the people have the power to nullify in court anytime if there's a case where those particular legislative, statutes or whatever the case may be on an individual that is working for the government and there's a crime involved there, then it's up to the people to make that decision, not a judge. If there's no crime, it's up to the judge to make that decision in equity, in the positive law side. For people who are working for government agencies or people who are working in different commercial activities. But as far as when the law is broken by one of those individuals, then that must move over to a court of law. But that which those people, the law which those people agreed to when they took that job or did that activity, they're held liable to that. But we, the people, have the ability to nullify any of those statutes or regulations or whatever they're putting upon these people. If we feel it's unjust, we may feel that the statute is unjust. We may feel that applying the statute in this case is unjust. We may just not like it and nullify it. That's what we can do. That's the power of the people because, you see, people don't realize is we are the lawmakers, okay? The true lawmaker, the only one true sovereign, of course, is the governor of the universe, God himself. And, of course, he is the lawmaker. But he gave us the power and the authority to make law and to govern our government and to have government by the consent of the people. Again, it's laid out in the Declaration of Independence. So, but equity is very important. They're just applying the statutes of different jurisdictions upon the people, and through that they are controlling the people, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
People don't recognize that because we're ignorant to all that.
But you know, it takes some work to absorb it, and then context is so important. And I know that for me, the context is going to come more as I just keep going. But
it all clicks together like anything else in life. the more time you spend with something, the more understanding you have of that thing that you're spending time with it. People don't need to be able to articulate it. They need to be able to understand it. And it's common law is very easy to understand. Everything we put together, I believe, is really easy to understand. So understanding it is key. And when you read enough of it, you'll understand enough to be able to share with other people some major things that really, that you feel that really impressed upon your heart. But, anybody who wants to know the law, they need to spend a lot of time in it. And when you spend a lot of time in it, I know I mentioned this before to you, I think it was last week or the week before we talked a little bit. We don't need to understand, we don't need to remember anything. We just need to understand it and spend time with it. And it'll just work itself in the framework of our mind. And then it'll just kind of fall off your lips, off your tongue.
Right. So. I'll end with this. Last week I was hearing those couple of parties coming on, and they were in a lot of pain, and they were doing the best they could, and they were doing it what they could do. And I've been in that place about 7 years ago, and not knowing what to do, and so it's like, so you start out and you just, this is what we're going to do, but there's no structure. I understand that, but it's like these people that we're up against, I have to understand how they view me, and they view me like I'm a little stick figure, that has nothing, and that I'm worth nothing except to do what they want. And so walking into these courts before devolution is complete, it's a pretty frightening thought, actually, because, it doesn't matter why, but I mean, to understand and be able to bring the Spirit of God into the courtroom without trying to be holy and demonstrative, and just like walk in and just be confident that I'm in there for the right reason, I'm there and I'm prepared, and then let God take it, because there's nothing else, I can do. It's humbling, but I just wish that those people who were on there last week, I wish they would take your course. Because, I'm changing. I am changing. And there's a lot of hope. And it's not mine. It's a hope in God, that I have a covenant to keep. The Bible's a covenant. Well, the Declaration of Independence is a covenant. Everything we have in there is a covenant. And so I have a part in that. I can participate. And it brings God closer to me, too. So, thank you so much for your work. You work so hard. And, I really appreciate meeting you. And I look forward to working with you and moving through this. And I yield. Yeah, right. Thank you.
And let me just share one other thing here. On our front page, this is probably some of the best or most important papers to read are the ones right here on the front page, Redress of Grievances to an Open Natural Law Court. Presentment to President Trump and Attorney General Bondi. And like I said, I have another one to put up here, and I just never got around to putting it up. I'll put it up this week, though. But and that's the latest one we sent Bondi, Cash, and Trump. Then there's presentment to President Trump directly here on one, indictment upon the federal judiciary, presentment to the United States Supreme Court, and an addendum to that grand jury presentment. So reading through those papers, okay, the latest would be first. Maybe the best way to read this would be from the bottom up, though, because, you want to work with the presentment to the United States Supreme Court and the addendum to that, and then work your way up the line here. And, you'll get a lot of knowledge. You'll learn a lot. It also, for anybody who's writing papers, that will also help you in writing papers, By reading other people's papers is how you learn to write papers. And, I remember when I first started this and I looked back to some of the papers that I've written, it was very immature, very juvenile, I guess, very immature because, I was totally ignorant to so many things and the structure and due process and so on and so forth. And as time went on, I learned all that. I learned about due process. I learned by reading other people's papers, and especially Founding Fathers' papers and stuff. I learned from that. So, again, reading is the best way learn stuff. So, okay.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Elizabeth. Okay, we'll take our next caller. We only got two more people in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, again, *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or browser, there should be a button, enter the queue. All right, our next caller is Terry. What's your state, Terry? You got the mic.
Hey, John, this is Terry from Laverne, Minnesota. How we doing?
Good, good. How you doing?
Hey, I just wanted, with the last caller, I just kind of wanted to give her something that she's kind of touched on. And it's something that I want to impart to everybody, is that the problem with the courts nowadays, if you go in as an innocent person, a person who hasn't violated a right, the chances of you winning that court case are pretty much next to nil, because you have no rights if you're innocent. And that's, you do not have due process, you do not have the right of a fair trial. Everything's gone away. You have a better chance, if you violated a right of getting due process, if you've gone through and done a real crime, you actually do get due process. And that's, I think that's the thing I wanted to impart. I heard her, you know, her emotions, her tears, and they're justified, because you're going into a court watching somebody, and I call it getting financially raped, is what I call it. And when you're innocent, you can't be guilty. You can't be found guilty if you're innocent, but you're always assumed to be guilty when you go into a court when you're innocent. And that's the problem I have with all of the courts here in the United States of America. I actually, during one of my court cases, I pled innocent, and the judge pled not guilty for me. And I said, you can't be pleading not guilty for me. I've not violated a right. They don't care. And so that's what I wanted to impart. Now, here's where I have a question. December 19th was my trial date. The day before that, he told me I have a pre-trial. So on the 18th, I showed up during the day. And during the pretrial, he told me verbatim, he said, you do not have the right of free speech in my court. You do not have the right to bring up the Constitution, and you do not have the right to bring up the Declaration of Independence.
They're not shy about that either, but go ahead.
No. Not only are they not shy, they don't even know that what they're doing is violating your right of free speech, and they're proud of it, but the word isn't shy, John. The word is so ignorant that they no longer know what justice is anymore.
Right.
And that's where I'm coming from. I hear her emotions.
Their conscience has been seared. That's the problem that they have. And they got to win at all costs. Everybody has got to be found guilty. They've got to do everything they can to make you guilty. They stack juries. They do everything because everybody in that courtroom is against you. The judge is against you. The prosecutor, if there's a prosecutor, if it's a criminal court, of course, there's a prosecutor. Prosecutor is against you. And what a lot of people don't realize is your own lawyer is against you also.
Yeah, and I've actually written that.
You properly.
I wrote that, John. I put in there that there's three lawyers to one person who's not a lawyer. And the unfortunate thing is, the person that's not a lawyer is the only one that knows what justice is.
That's right.
And that's where I think that we all need to get together. And when I say get together, in spirit and in mind, and we need to get together. I hear what you're saying, John. I'm saying we need to get together and defend each other. And that's what I signed my all my filings with now. I'm still in court for a third one now. I signed my filings. We the people that are willing to defend the innocent against those that are defending the innocent, or that are violating the innocent, that are paid to defend the innocent. That's how I sign all of my filings. And I always say we the people. It's not me. It's we the people that are innocent, that are filing a charge against those paid to defend the innocent, that are refusing to defend the innocent. And that's where I'm coming from, and I've been coming from since I've been talking to you guys. I think the problem is we fight each other a lot, and it's a fight. You know, we're all in this together. Why are we going through and violating each other? And why are the people that we pay to defend us, why are they only ones that are going through and violating the innocent? So when you walk into a court right now, they're supposed to be afraid of us. We're not supposed to be afraid of them. I can tell you that I'm very much afraid. I'm afraid of the police when I get pulled over. I'm afraid of the police when they come to my house to do something, because they will turn something that's nothing into everything, and they will escalate it to the point where you weren't ever violating anybody and you have no due process and you're done. And if you fight it like I did, you get a probation officer for a year. You pay $200 a month for them to call you up and say, do you still have the same phone number and do you live at the same address? And I go, yeah. And that is the whole system in a nutshell. You are innocent. Your probation officer should be somebody that's helping you get a job. Once you come out of jail and you've served your time, you're innocent. You've served your time, or you've paid your due. If you stole something and you paid somebody back tenfold because you stole something, you've paid your due process. You are done. A probation officer's job nowadays is to make sure you do not get a job, and they make sure that you pay them for doing nothing for you, and they make sure you do not get employed by anybody. A probation officer should never be that. You are innocent once you come out of jail. You're done. It's almost Christian. You've paid your due. You've been forgiven for your transgressions, for your sins against somebody else. And that should be it. They should be helping you and trying to reform you, not trying to go through and keep... You're still guilty when you get out of jail. And that's the unfortunate thing with this whole system.
Well, to these people, everyone is guilty. And that's the problem. Everyone's guilty but them. You know, Christ didn't have anything good to say about lawyers. You know, they're destructive. They destroy the law. Look at the bar attorneys are the minions of the New World Order. Okay, and people need to really understand what that means. They work for the New World Order. Whether they know it or not, it does not matter. They work for the New World Order. We are not a Christian nation. They teach these people that we are not a Christian nation. They teach these people that our country is fashioned under Rome, and we're under Roman law, which is civil law, which finds its roots right back to Babylonian law, the law of the city, the law of municipality, the law to control the slaves. That's what it's all about, and fleece you of as much money as they could possibly get off you, and punish you, and punishing you, putting you in jail. They make money there, too. They make money at every step of the way. And they I don't know how they sleep at night. They have seared their conscience, and they have no mercy on anyone. They do evil things. They conspire to put you in jail, whether you're innocent or not. They don't care. As far as they're concerned, everyone's guilty, and they're the only ones that escape all this stuff because they're part of the system, and all these judges are the same thing. You know, they're all bar attorneys. And our founding fathers were lawyers, but they were not bar attorneys. They despised bar attorneys. The bar attorneys came over to the Americas, you know, when we were colonies in 1750. And that's when the king sent them over here in order to destroy our common law courts, because they couldn't get what they wanted in our courts because the people refused to indict. And that's when they started to, you know, put a bag over the people's head and throw them on a ship and take them over to England to try them there. And that's, we're up against the same thing. It's never changed. It hasn't changed. You know, England has been and still is to this day, is responsible for the assassination of our presidents, all of them. Okay. And people find that hard to believe, but that is an absolute fact. Okay.
No, hard to believe at all.
So we have a lot of problems. And again, committees of safety can change this. We can fix this. We can take our courts back. We can bring our courts of justice. We can pull people out of power and authority by, you know, doing recalls. but we need the manpower to do a recall to bring the petitions up to bring these people out. Or we can force, a lot of these judges out. We can indict judges. We can make our courts of justice again. The school boards, for instance, we can go in there and we can take control of the school boards. We can require that they do the will of the people and teach our children the good things and not all this evil stuff, demoralizing them. And if they don't obey, we can get them a writ quo warranto. In 3 days, they're out of power, and you seize their seats to the next election. People don't know about these things. We teach people these things. You can control the school boards. You can control the town boards. You could do this to any of the boards, okay? And then we can get rid of anybody that's an elected individual from the standpoint like a governor. You can get rid of a governor. You can get rid of a mayor. You can get rid of anybody you put in council. Anybody, an assemblyman, a congressman. We can take them all out of office if they don't obey us, okay? But one person can't do it. One group of people can't do it. One county can't do it. No, we need to get this going throughout the United States. And unless the people come to realize this and understand this and do this, we're not going to get our courts back and we're not going to get our country back. It's lost. And your children's children will pay for this again. That's the problem. So, all right, anything else, Terry?
Yeah, I wanted to say one thing, and I mean this as positively as I can. It may sound like I'm disagreeing with you, but I'm not. I look at it more favorably. I look at everybody that I know, including the lawyer that you know, put me on a year's probation for being innocent and pled not guilty for being innocent. I do not hold any hatred for them. I don't see them as my enemy. What I do see them as people that are so full of what I call cognitive dissonance, that they have disdain for the innocent. And I see them as we the people. The problem is they don't know who the we the people are. And I don't think even we do. We don't understand that we are all we the people. There is no government. There is no nobody. If they don't understand who we the people are, which they don't anymore, and if we don't understand who the we the people are, we'll never change. And I agree with you on the part about we'll never change, but everybody has to understand that everyone, it's government of we the people, for the people, by the people, and of the people. And we are all we the people. They just forget who they are when they get that power. That's the problem. And so when we're innocent and going into a court, they don't even understand what an innocent person is. And I've literally, one of my filings with the Minnesota Appeals Court was, I need a definition of the word innocent, and they won't even give you that. Because that is the house of cards for them. They don't know what the innocent are, other than people to be used to be violated and victimized. Because everybody calls it, it's a victimless crime. No, it's absolutely a victim. It's the person that's the defendant. The innocent person is always the victim if there is no victim. And that's because they're extorting the innocent or they're violating the innocent in the womb. One of the two. That's all they're doing. Extortion or murder in the womb. And their job is to protect the innocent in the womb, in the courts, and outside of the womb. Every innocent person in all three of those locations are supposed to be protected and defended. But what they're doing is they're violating 90% of every arraignment that I've gone to, 90% of the people, maybe almost 99% of the people, are innocent people. And only 1%, maybe sometimes 5% of the people are guilty. They actually did violate a right. And that's the problem. That's what I'm trying to convey to everybody here, is that we got to understand that they're supposed to defend the innocent, and we are. My job is to defend the innocent, which is why I signed my filings that way, is I am defending the innocent, and we all have to choose to defend the innocent. We all do, because they're not.
Well, look, they're raised on greed and power. That's what they learn in bar school. Well, you know, first of all, they come out of school, which is a terrible education to begin with, and so they're already primed for the control. And once they get into the bar schools, you know, it's all about teaching them how much money they could make and power they have. And as a matter of fact, when they come out of school, they purposely don't teach them certain things. And they have to go work with another lawyer, you know, so that other lawyer kind of puts their arm around them and teaches them the ropes and finishes the job. And it's all about greed and power. I'll tell you, all these lawyers are the same thing. And they think you're stupid. They think try to correct them. And boy, do they get they get themselves in an uproar. Especially judges, you know. I mean, I do writ of errors, and boy, do they get pissed off over that. They have them send them back for me, and I send them back in again. You know
what it is, Tom? It's contempt of court. It's contempt of court. It's contempt of the innocent is what it is.
Yeah. So,
can I ask one question, and then I'll be done?
Yeah, go ahead. We only got one other person in the queue, so, you know, other people might want to get into the queue. Star 601 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an Apple browser, should be a button, enter the queue. Yeah, go ahead, Terry.
My question is, you know, I decided to spend the $80 or $100 it was to get the transcript from the pretrial the day before. And, you know, in there he literally says, you do not have the right of free speech in my court. And I said, by whose authority? And he said, by mine, which means they're citing their own authority to say I'm going to railroad you. My question to you guys and everybody over there is, so is this a waste of time to have this transcript because nobody's going to look at it? Is that your guys' interpretation?
Well, look, I record my court cases and of course, they don't know about that. And so I write very good affidavits from my court cases because I can almost for word for word. So I don't even bother with their transcripts. They could deny it, but, you know, again, look, they don't rebut an affidavit. An affidavit rests as truth in a court of law. And so unless it's rebutted, it stands as truth. And a matter of fact, I just finished the paper where the other side finally was told to answer. I was to write something, they would answer that. And they answered it they came back with a lawsuit against me, but really not to sue me for anything particularly, but really just trying to get control of the court. So my final paper I filed after that is, well, they didn't answer all the questions that I had, so therefore they agree, and therefore this case is over. I haven't heard back from them yet. They kind of trapped themselves. But I don't believe I'm going to get anything out of this court. I'm going to have to take it through the appeal process. Sometimes you can win through the appeal process and see where it goes. But the bottom line is this, okay? I've got lots of cases. I've done personal cases particularly. And, you know, at some point in time, if we get our courts of justice back, and we can get them back if the people decide to take them back. They have to decide to do it. You know, I'll resurrect those court cases and I'll win them. You know, it's a matter of record.
My question is, are you saying they're just going to ignore the transcript and it happens?
Oh, no, you can get the transcript if you want to spend the money for the transcript. That could be a good idea because, look, they like to clean them, but usually don't clean them up until later on, okay? And depending on the case, of course, a lot of cases it's not worth going back and doing that.
Have the transcript. My question is,
if you have it recorded, okay, they'll try to tell you it's against the law to record it, but it's not against the law to record it. They just don't want you to record their crime.
No, but my question for you is that transcript where he says you do not have the right of free speech in my court, is that something that's worth anything, or are you saying it's worthless because no judge is ever going to look at it?
That's a denial of your right, right there. That's a lawsuit right there.
Right. But that's my question is that worth something to you and everybody else and to me?
Absolutely. I go all the time. You know, look, when I move a case into federal court, it's for denial of due process, for denial of some right I have, because that's the only thing you can argue in a federal court. And that's where there is some value here, because, you see, if you have a court case, and they denied your right of due process. They injured you in some way for a denial of some right, okay? And if you move it into federal court, that's the only discussion that could take place in that federal court. Whatever's going on about that case, federal courts don't want to hear about it because it has nothing to do with them. But you see, in your once they violate your right, you can ask the federal court, you know, in the decision for your wherefore clause, is for them to cease and desist. And if they've taken your money, to return your money. And if they and of course you're suing for money. If you're in jail for so many days, you're looking for so much money for an unalienable right. You're looking that was been violated. You're looking for so much money, and you have to lay that out in your wherefore clause. But the thing is when you get into the federal courts, they really don't know what that case is all about. So that could be a good thing on our behalf. Now, they'll try to do something in the back room, maybe, but I'll tell you what, it's my experience and opinion, it's my opinion, okay, there seems to be disdain between the federal court, lawyers and judges against the states, those who argue the cases on the state level. I don't know what that's all about, but there seems to be that disdain. The federal court has a disdain for those lawyers, and I know in one case particularly where the judge really got upset with these people because they're not following the rules. Look, you guys know your own. He didn't put it this way. I'm putting it this way. You guys know your own rules. You come into my court and you don't have any respect and you violate my rules. You know, I think that's what's really going on because these lawyers that fight cases in the court do not really understand the jury, and I don't know why they don't, but they don't seem to understand the jurisdictions of the federal courts and some of the things that's going on there. And again, I see this disdain upon them from the federal judges, but that's my experience.
Have you ever heard of a non-oratory?
No.
The Minnesota Appeals Court, basically said I don't have due process, you violated my right of fair trial, I'm innocent. And what they did is all three judges got together for the Minnesota Appeals Court, and it's called a non-oratory, where I do not get to say anything, neither does the prosecutor for the district court, and they just come back and they go, we're upholding the disorderly conduct law that's unconstitutional. That's what they came back with.
The case against you is unconstitutional. That they were what is it?
Disorderly conduct.
Yeah, what was their decision?
Their decision is we're going to uphold the disorderly conduct law in the state of Minnesota.
Oh, okay.
But see, they have a non-oratory, and then they never got back to me on the non-oratory, and so they just finally here just a couple days ago. So almost a year later, it'll be a year in November. They came back with, hey, we still uphold the disorderly conduct. If you look
up... in non-oratory, I presume what they mean is you can send papers, but don't come in to talk. We don't want to talk.
Can't do anything. They just meet together. All three or four judges all meet together.
And they just take the paperwork that they want.
Yeah, exactly. So,
And that's one of the other problems I see all the time with these judges is, when they write up their decisions... they quote all kinds of stuff out of these lawyers' papers, but nothing, not one iota of a word or a phrase out of my papers. Nothing. And that shows bias.
Yeah. Ex parte communicado was one of them.
Ex parte communication.
Yeah, ex parte communication was one of them. But, that's why I find this, this is hard for probably you guys to believe, but I found the court system it was $500 the first time for making somebody stand by the road too long. The second time was when they told me I was too stupid to read and I called them buttholes. And that was 10 days in jail and a year of probation. And I actually went to court because I figured it was a great education for, $700. Well, now it's about $1,000. I got a great education here on what the judicial system is, which is complete and utter injustice is what it is.
Well, they look at, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. And yeah. So I am always very careful in what I say or what I write. I try to do it as respectful as possible on the one hand, but to the point, and make it clear on what my opinions and position is on the other hand. And when I do a writ of error or something, again, I try to do it very respectful, but nevertheless, an error is an error, and they need to correct it. And they do not like correction. Who do you think you are? You're an ignorant individual. You don't know the law. You don't understand nothing. You come into this courtroom, and you're going to correct me? I mean, they don't say those words to me, but that's, I can sense that. That's their attitude. They get their backs arched up, and they just get angry, and they're looking to hit you with something, maybe like that, putting you in jail for a few days or
probation. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly. If I would have just paid the extortion fee to begin with, I would have. But I decided
well,
I was going to.
You should have look at. You should have paid the extortion fee and then move it in, and then sue them in a court for denial of due process. Because look at, you're not getting a court case. They're taking something away from you. And once they seize your property or something, they have to go take you through due process. And due process is to be heard in a court of law. And a court of law is one where an untainted, free and independent jury makes the decision. And when they bypass that whole system, then you could bring them into federal court, sue them for denial of due process. Now, whether you win in federal court or not, at least that's the next step up. But it's much safer to go that route. And when you move a court case that they brought you into, okay, look at, usually it's the traffic court, usually it's a traffic violation or something.
Yeah, it
is. You know, so when they pulled you into that court, they brought you into their system. And their courts are unified, at least here in New York State, they're unified, which means I should be able to move that case without any cost to the state court. Okay, and even to the federal court for without any cost, okay? And I had to fight for it, and I never got that. They refuse. They want their money, and that's all there is to it, you know?
It was $600 here for me to bring it to the Minnesota Appeals Court, which I paid. Mm-hmm. It was a great education for me.
Well, that's a lot of money to bring it into an appeal court. Wow.
Right, but Minnesota is, I would say, probably almost might surpass California and New York on insanity, is what I would say.
Wow.
We have a governor that's probably the dumbest governor, but almost the most corrupt, and I would even say evil. I would say he just passed a law now that abortion is good up until the birth date.
Yeah, they're going to pay for it one way or the other in the long run anyway. They got to stand before God at some point in time. We should pray for them because that's what God tells us to do.
I do, and I have a lot of love for them. I just really feel sorry that they think that they have to do this to every innocent person in the United States of America, and that's my... You hate to see all the people that are in tears by just a simple... driving down the road or, you know, a DMV person tells you you're too stupid to read. I'm pretty positive here that I'm smart. I probably can read since I've probably done about, you know, over 100 filings here. I can read, but that's just the audacity that they have is that they're so much superior that the rest of us people that are not our government are just people that can't read. And to say that to somebody, that's trying to pay their extortion fees, because that's what it is. After the first year of buying a vehicle, every year after that is extortion. That's exactly what it is. And the same thing for when you buy a house. Every year after that is extortion.
Absolutely.
That is the definition of extortion. Forced payment for something you own. The mafia does it. It's just that they license themselves and they give themselves permission to do the extortion, and they just use the courts to do the extortion.
But they call it protection. That's the only difference. Yeah,
I pay the extortion fees, and I normally have done that my whole life. I just got God told me you're going to go through this and learn what this is. So I'm on my third one now. I'm now doing my third one, but I'm fighting it before I even get to the hearing stage, and I'm fighting it before I do arraignment. I told them, I said, I will pay the extortion fee if under direct...
Do you start off with challenging the jurisdiction?
Yes, yes.
So that's where it all starts off. And when you challenge a jurisdiction, once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be heard. They never hear it, and therein is the denial of due process to move it into federal court.
Correct. And I do that, and I also say you have no authority over the innocent. You only have authority over people that have violated rights. And that's the same thing as jurisdiction. But see, they don't understand. They cite their own authority.
An equity court has no power. Let me say this as strong as I can.
Yeah, I agree.
Has no power to fine or incarcerate. Let that sink in, what that means. Equity courts. An equity court is a court that proceeds according to statutes, okay, or regulations. Those courts have zero power to fine you or incarcerate you, yet they do all day long. That's how bad it is, and that's why people need to learn and know the law. We need to understand what their powers and what their authorities are. And common, you know, natural law, which is common law, is really very simple. It just gets back to common sense. Nothing more than common sense.
I would add to that, though. I would say that it's past common sense, and I agree with you. I would say that in order for me to be in a court, legitimately, I have to have violated a right.
That's right. You have to injure somebody.
Yeah, and to be found guilty, I have to be either I did that deliberately or I did it with extreme negligence. So if I'm drunk...
But they have to prove intent.
Yeah. Yeah, well, not intent, because if you're drunk, you're doing it extremely negligent and you violated somebody's right. There may not have been any intent, but you're a stupid idiot that went out and got...
Well, that's a different story. You're putting people in danger, so, but again, you know, that brings you to a whole different thing. You still got to be brought, if they're going to go out against you, they still got to bring you into a court of law. And that's where, you know, well, that's where the system, a proper system set up with the administrators for the juries, which are the people who would, you know, orientate the juries and do some research for the juries and even proceed and bring information to the jury for them to indict on further things or whatever the case may be, or empower the jury to go into offices and look up different things and look into the computers of the people who work for us. And I mean, all kinds of powers and authorities, but we don't have that because that's all controlled by bar attorneys. But you see, if someone is driving intoxicated, okay, I think a great system, and that's something we need to think about. How should that be dealt with? Okay, I would think that that the police officer should have that car towed, bring the keys, drop it off at the courthouse for the administrators who can represent the grand jury. And if they don't abide by what they work out, they can pass it on to the grand jury, let the grand jury decide. And the grand jury can make a decision to require them maybe to take, do some community action and maybe take a course concerning, you know, drunk driving and do whatever is necessary to try to straighten that person out. And if they refuse to agree to that, then the grand jury can indict. You see, because that does put people in danger. But for every injury, there must be a remedy to begin with, and there must be an injured party in order for there to be a crime. If there is no injured party, if there's no body of evidence, then there is no crime. And also intent. Intent has to be also part of the problem. You know, the case I brought up numerous times in the past is a place when a woman had a child in the car, went shopping, forgot the child was in the car, and the car died. She ended up going to jail, and they prosecute her and so on. So look, she'd been suffered enough to begin with, number one. Clearly, the woman didn't intend for her child to die, and her defense was never made. And this happens all day long, every day, because people are totally ignorant to the law. They must prove intent. If you can't prove intent, then there is no crime. Even if you killed somebody, okay, if they can't prove that you intended to kill somebody, you know, being an accident, could be a vehicular thing, anything, if there was no intent to kill that person, they can't prosecute for murder. They just can't. But they do all day long.
All day long they do it. And you're right, they can't, but they do.
That's right. They do what they want.
That, and that's where you and I agree on, is that The innocent should never be a defendant. You mm-hmm. have to violate a right. There has to be a victim. And when the state brings you in as an innocent person, the victim is that innocent defendant. Mm-hmm. And that's where I come from. Yes, you're very stupid to drive drunk, but you've got to, you got to be swerving the lanes and interfering with somebody else's driving to be that stop to happen. And yes, I agree that nobody should be driving drunk or high on pot. And I agree that if you're 70 years old and you can't walk and you have no reaction time, you shouldn't be driving either. But you've got to see that displayed before you can arrest that person, because that's otherwise the intent is wrong. I agree with you on the intent part. Yeah.
All right, well, Terry, I got to move on now. We've got two people.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sorry I took up so much time.
No, that's okay, because there have been many people in the queue, and we still have some time, so we have plenty of time.
But I don't mean to hog, and I really did really just want to hear, because if I have the transcript here, and if somebody, I would like to, all of us to get together here and use that transcript to say, hey, these courts are just horrible, and they're literally violating people and railroading innocent people. That's what that is. That's literally the definition of railroading an innocent.
Absolutely. So, all right, Charlie, good call. Let me go to the next.
Bye.
Thank you. Okay, next caller, 702 number. What's your first name? It looks like you're coming from Nevada.
This is Daniel, and I'm a Washingtonian, actually. I have two quick points, John.
Okay.
Been through your course. I'm dealing with a county court, and I've sent them all of the things that have been suggested, quarantos, et cetera, et cetera. They've blown it all off, as we've well established.
Well, you know, they have a rule here in, I think this is on a federal level. Let me think about this a minute.
Well, I was actually going to get to that.
I think it's on a federal level where they have their rules. Where they've abrogated the writs of the free man. Literally, I had a judge tell me I can't write any writs. I mean, I write them anyway. I write writ of error, writ mandamus, quo wanto. You know, I write them anyway. But they make the claim, well, we're not going to pay any attention to it because you don't have that no more. That's been abrogated through the rules, their court rules.
Which absolutely.
Level.
Which will come back and bite them, I believe. And here are my two quick.
Well, look at we indicted the entire every single judge on a federal judiciary across the entire America because they're all guilty. It's proven by the cases that we've written. It's proven by they do the same thing. Whatever case we've written, whether we did it in Washington or we did it in Virginia, New York, New Jersey, Texas, it does not matter. They all do the same thing. That proves conspiracy to begin with. And every single one of them knows that they have shut the doors of justice. That common law courts, which is natural law courts, are no longer available in our court system, and that is a violation, that is a total denial of all our rights, period. The right to due process, the right to have your say in a court of law to be heard, this right to be protected in a court of justice, there's nothing more, it's the law of the land, okay? So every single judge is guilty of that. They need to be removed from the bench, and no bar attorney should enter any courtroom in America at all. I mean, the original 13th Amendment is very clear on that, that if they were to hold a title of honor, which they hold the title Esquire, okay, that's a title of honor. So anybody who holds a title of honor and takes a seat in government not only loses that seat but loses their citizenship of here in the United States of America. That's the law, the 13th Amendment. Our founding fathers wrote it. It was passed in 1818 or 1819. And of course, that disappeared. They replaced it with another.
I concur 100%. The two points. The 2025 edition of the Federal Rules for Civil Procedure is $20 on Amazon, under $20. And there have been changes to help we the people, service of process, things like that have been tweaked a bit so that we don't have to go chasing after them and paying process servers. There are things working in our favor, but that's only one point. The second point is...
If you go out, you get the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure and also the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, the FRCPs. You can Google that and get them. Just put that in Google and put PDF after it, and you get PDF downloads of them. So you can get all of their rules for free.
I'm sure that's the case as well. I do well with books, although I don't read them often enough. So that was the one point. Yes, there are updates which are helping we the people.
The other thing is those rules really don't apply to us, because that doesn't even apply to their own courts of equity. It doesn't apply anywhere because it's against the law. We're under the law of the land. The law of the land brings us back to the foundation of the law of the land, which is the Declaration of Independence, which places us under the laws of nature and of nature's God. That's common law. And under that, all law is sits upon that foundation. That includes the law of equity. It sits on that foundation. The rules of the court are the rules of common law, which is common sense, and they've done away with it. They gave themselves the power. First of all, Congress had the audacity to think that they can give more power and authority to the court by giving them the authority, so they claim. They don't have this authority, it doesn't exist, but they gave it to them anyway, okay, to write their own rules, because they thought that the rules of God is problematic. It doesn't work. They called it unjust. They literally called it God's rules unjust. Okay, so they did away with those rules with the 1934 Rules Enabling Act, and in 1938 they passed their own rules. The United States Supreme Court, they claimed to have written it, but they didn't write it. The Bar Association wrote it. And then it gave them to the judges to claim to write it, and they put those rules in, and they do update them, and each court adds to their own rules to this as if they got the power and authority to do it, and they exercise their rules as if it's law. They'll throw you out of court under a rule, a violation of a rule. They'll throw you out of court where a free man cannot lose his court. No free man can lose his court, okay? But they do it anyway. They make all this stuff up. They empower themselves. They write the law right on the bench. They interpret law one way, and that benefits them. And if it's the opposite way, they'll interpret it another way. It always benefits them. Every single case, I've been doing this for over 15 years now, and every single case is the same way. They just empower themselves, make up the rules, make up the meaning of things, and execute and throw you out of the court constantly. And if they're going out after you, they find you guilty and fine you or put you in jail or whatever. And they don't even have the power to do that. They have no power to do it. But because the people are ignorant, they do it. Because people don't know.
I concur. The attempt, I'll try and keep it as brief as possible. The attempt of going to get remedy through the federal court, it teaches us. So I've had one case dismissed. I'm sure I messed it up, but I have to go back now and learn more. So in that process, when these folks are rounded up, and I believe in my heart of hearts that they will meet their justice, the government is going to need people to go in and be put in there. They have to know that there are people, and if you file a complaint with whoever it is, the Justice Department, the State Department, if you've changed your standing, the Department of the Navy, the Criminal Investigation Department, I've sent complaints to all of those people, so somebody has got to be watching on some level. They will know, hey, at least this guy knows what Article 6 is. At least this guy, and they have a pool of people who, maybe I'm crazy, but they're going to have a pool of people who are invested enough to dispense justice in the future afterwards. So that's all I have to say on that. But my second point.
Our representatives, let me respond to that though first. Our representatives are supposed to know the law. They're supposed to know the Constitution. They're supposed to impeach these people when they step outside of their authority. Most judges, well, on a federal level, judges are appointed. On a state level, they are elected. The people can recall them. So we take that power of impeachment by recall if that's what we want to do. And that's what we need to be doing here in New York or any place else, because they've been elected to that position. But again, those on the federal level are appointed, and they're appointed by the legislature, particularly the Senate, of course, and because they're the ones in charge of the judiciary. And it's up to them to, when they see that, and I don't think they've ever impeached a judge. I never heard of any time a judge impeached. Maybe before, long before I was born, but not even in my research have I come upon anything where judges have been impeached. And they should be impeached, and the Constitution calls for that if they step outside of their powers and authorities, okay? But they don't. So that brings
I believe you, John. I absolutely believe you.
Let me just finish this. This is the most important part. It falls back onto the people, because the people elected these people who don't know the law and put them into the power of authority, where in this case, well, it's supposed to be the states at this point, but the states don't even do it because they're supposed to send two senators, but we've been electing them, but we put them into power. Okay, we didn't check them out to make sure that they know the law to begin with. And the biggest problem to this nation is parties. People seem to think we can't have a government without parties. A two-party system is absolutely required, people say. No, that's the destruction of America. George Washington spoke about this. Our founding fathers spoke about it. You can read it in the Federalist Papers. You can read it in Washington's farewell address. Okay, that they would be the destruction of this country. It has to stop. Do not get political parties going. Yet they've happened. And what happens? Look what they're doing right now. They shut down the government. Do you know, if there was no political parties and these people actually answered to the people, which is what it's supposed to be, they're supposed to answer to me and you, when they're not in a political party, then they're not brought together by a party. Boss, you'll never have a shutdown, because they'll never get enough people to agree that are truly representing their constituents to agree to a government shutdown. It would never happen. And just about all the problems we have, all the woes would be solved if the people were educated, required them to be educated, and recall them when they break their oath. But they don't want to seem to do it. I mean, some people are. We need more people to do it. Let's do it. That's why we're creating committees of safety, to do exactly that thing. But back to you.
Absolutely. And that's why God created the United States Marine Corps. Okay.
Okay.
Because at some point, these people may be under arrest, all of them. And there's going to be a need for grand juries and court administrators. And it's people who have fought the system, who know just a little bit, who I think will be among the people who are picked for those.
Well,
but
that's why we're trying to educate people.
That's all on that.
That's why we're trying to educate people to be those administrators.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. I wouldn't know what a quo warranto was until going through your course. Now, yes, I've sent them out, and they were blown off, but at least I know what it is now. The second point is, this morning I came across a video, and it's called The Secret Financials Underlying Our Justice System. The Secret Financials Underlying Our Justice System on YouTube. It's an hour and 47 minutes long. The guy is a son of a federal judge, I believe, and his uncle was a judge also. And he goes into the creating of bonds, CUSIP numbers, what they do with all of that stuff, what it means, and how these courts are creating securities fraud. So our remedy may just be trying to get some of the paperwork, and he goes through all of the paperwork, all of the forms that the IRS has that we can file complaints with. Our remedy may be in the tax code and the FTC. If you file complaints, they have to investigate, and they are committing fraud on a daily basis. The people on every call, every week, they're not filing their 1099 A, Bs, and Cs correctly. They're guilty as sin, and they're evil. So our remedy can be I don't know if the shutdown will handle that, but you send in and that complaint is on a computer, at some point something has to be done. That's their. So we will have remedy, I believe, in my heart. And we do have to take bullets along the way. But that's really all I have. I'll yield. Thank you kindly, John. I appreciate your course. And that's it. Thank you. Okay. Oh, lastly, the secret financials underlying our justice system on YouTube. It's an hour and 47 minutes long. That's all I yield.
Yeah, I've already put it up on the desktop for people who want to see it. And I'll listen through it, and maybe we'll post it up on our website also. So the secret financials underlying our justice system with Todd Duell, D-U-E-L-L.
Duell. It is absolute gold. Thank you kindly, John. I'm out.
I do. Appreciate it. Okay. Okay, we have another call here. If anybody else wants to get into the queue, star 601 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or a browser, just click on the button that gets you into the queue. Okay, next caller is 908 number. What's your first name and your state? 908, area code, wireless caller. You got the mic. Let me see, you're muted, so I've unmuted you. Let me try unmuting. Oh, looks like you unmuted yourself. Okay, you've got the mic. What's your first name and state?
Hello, John. This is Daniel from New Jersey.
Daniel from New Jersey. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi. I have one question, one statement, and a request. The request is, I remember you mentioned earlier, and it's something I wanted to find that I've seen in the past from your study courses, was the 51 or 52 different types of law.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's in one of your courses. Whenever you get a chance, could you email me that particular section or where I should look?
Yeah, send a request to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. And just put that request of exactly what you're looking for. I know what you're looking for. I'm trying to think where, you know, it probably is in the course. I did do, what I did was I actually went through Black's Law, looking at all the laws and counted them, and they were 51 altogether. And law being one of those 51. So
yeah, I liked how it was displayed on the course. It was,
yeah, and most of, remember, look at, there's all kinds of courts. There's exchequer courts. There's all kinds of courts. I mean, you know, remember, this is international, so there are courts from all over the place, and they list them all up, and decisions and meanings, you know, definitions and so on. And but our law and equity is our equity is, of course, you know, the codes, the U.S. codes on a federal level. There are U.S. codes. There are 57 U.S. codes. Actually, I think there's really only 56 because one of them has been blanked out. I guess they deleted one or something. I don't know what that was about. So I don't know what was there, but there's one number they skipped. So, but 57 is what they number up to. And so there are 57 different U.S. codes. And each one of those codes apply the different things, okay, and that's the one that you want to pay attention to. That is the one that is our equity course, okay, and so when you look up a meaning of a word or something, or a meaning of a phrase or something in Black's Law, more often than not, you'll find that it's really focusing in on our U.S. Supreme Court decisions, and you'll find meanings and usually they'll give you a couple of cases. And where, you know, a definition of something was made or whatever the case may be. But for instance, on these USC titles, 1 through 57, for instance, Title II controls Congress, and those are the statutes that control them that they have to be obedient to. Title III, presidents. Title 10 is armed forces. Title 11 is bankruptcy. So all of these different statutory courts or equity courts or positive law courts, it's all the same, all means the same thing. These courts apply, those titles apply only to those particular situations, those particular groups of people. There's commercial codes also.
And they apply to anybody operating certain commercial activities. Okay, the code's written for that. So that's the important thing. There's 57 of them, but there's also 51 laws that I counted out in Black's Law, and I can get posted that together for you if you
Thank
want
to. So I appreciate that. The question I have pertains to local municipalities, and that is to say, what type of government would replace a municipality, like the best option? Would it be a non-governmental organization, or would it be...
No, a municipality is a government. You know, it's a government, and it's run, for instance, a town or a village, that's a municipality. You know, so you have your village, you have your town, and you have even your cities. Okay. Boroughs are counties, and that really brings you to really state levels. There really is no county law, although some places they do make county law, but there's no authority for that. They're not lawmakers, okay? Only the states have the power to make law, and in the federal government, which is the United States, they have the power to make the legislation. I mean, the legislation is equity, so it is statutes and regulations to control, again, commercial activity or individuals operating in some kind of a government agency. But it has nothing to do with us.
What role would
I tell them in a court once I get into the argument and the debates? I'll challenge the jurisdiction, and I'll let it be known once they start to make an argument that it has nothing to do with me. It's right there, clear. These are commercial codes, right there. It says commercial on it. What, I'm not driving or doing anything commercially. Why are you bothering me? I'm not disrespectful that way. I'm kind of talking off the cuff. I do it very politely.
I agree. Same here. I guess a follow up to your response would be when you mentioned counties, then what type of authority does a county sheriff have, if any? Because if it's only the power in a state, then it doesn't seem very contingent on.
He applies the law. He doesn't apply statutes. He doesn't apply codes.
That's
he doesn't
correct.
Apply anything. He doesn't apply the laws of men. He applies the laws of God. Unfortunately, none of our sheriffs seem to know this. Even the sheriffs who know the Constitution, they don't know what I'm talking about right now. They don't know.
Well, they have more authority than the state in that respect, no?
They're top cop. They can arrest federal agents coming into their counties if they tell them not to come back to deal with this problem or that problem. If they come in with a warrant, it's not signed, you can turn them around and say, go home. Go get yourself a signed document, a wet ink signature from a judge, and bring that to me before I'm going to execute any kind of a warrant on anyone or allow you to do the same. But they don't do that. They don't know.
That sounds like a peaceful world. Awesome.
Yeah, it is. The sheriff is there to protect the king. And guess who the king is? We, the people, ordained and established the Constitution for them. We are the lawmakers. We are the king. People, again, don't understand that. This is power. If you act and live that way and enough people do it, they can't stop us.
Yeah.
But not enough people do it. They look at us as being crazy. They ignore us. They put us in jail. They fine us. They do what they want. And that's because people refuse to step up, get educated, and take control and exercise their unalienable right of government by consent. When you don't exercise a right, you lose that right. And that's why we've lost that right of government by consent. We don't have it no more. The 17th Amendment is unlawful. The 16th Amendment is unlawful. The 13th Amendment should have been connected to the 14th Amendment. They broke the 14th Amendment up into two parts, discarded the original 13th Amendment, and created a 13th and a 14th Amendment in 1865 or 66. I think it was 65. So that's what they did.
The original amendment didn't change
federal mobility. Say that. You broke up. Try that again.
Didn't the original 13th Amendment have something to do with titles of nobility?
Yes, titles of nobility and honor. You see, they put something in the Constitution concerning titles of nobility, but they didn't put in titles of honor. Okay, and it was written there mostly for the bar attorneys particularly, okay, and they corrected that with the 13th Amendment in 1819, or 1818. I got to look that up to see what year it is. I know it's one of those 2 years. But anyway, they corrected it with that, and they added into that titles of honor. Now, a title of honor, an esquire is a title of honor, okay? A knight is a title of honor, okay? A title of nobility, you know, that people inherit that title, okay? A title of nobility is inherited by your children, okay? You're in the upper class, so to speak. But a title of honor is not inherited. It's given to an individual. In this case, the target that our founding fathers were targeting was the bar attorneys that came over here in 1750. And they were targeting them to prevent them from polluting our courts and destroying our courts. By the time our Constitution was coming up, they had destroyed a huge amount of courts throughout the colonies already. Okay, and they were heading out west, and all those courts out west were being brought up under titles of under the equity process, under these what the bar attorneys were bringing in, which was civil law and making up law off the cuff, and there was a group of people back then that were going out bringing the common law, the natural law, out west, okay, because they were infiltrating out there as time was going on. But you know, these courts, our founding fathers were trying to shut them down. And let me see if I can find the actual 13th Amendment. I think I have it written here somewhere so I can read it. If you have another question or a comment, go ahead, and when I find it, I'll read it, but go ahead.
I got it right here. Let me see. It's 1865, ratified.
Well, no, that's the second 13th Amendment. The original 13th Amendment was written, ratified in 1818 or 1819. Our founding fathers were still alive. Jefferson was still involved, and others, even though his presidency was up by that point. But they were still involved in their conversations. But basically what the 13th Amendment said was that anybody who would hold an office, they were unable to hold any kind of office of trust, okay? And if they were found holding an office of trust and was executing a title of nobility, a title of honor, which is an esquire, okay, bar attorneys, all bar attorneys are esquires, then they not only lose their office, they also lose their citizenship. And that's what the 13th Amendment says, the original 13th Amendment.
That sounds actually like a reasonable price.
Oh, absolutely. You know, that means we can deport them to live at sea because they can't, where they're going to go. Maybe they can find a deserted island to live on.
The king or queen,
they
that's where.
Find that, you know.
So, all right. So the next real small point is, I was wondering if you and the organization or the association was ready to use silver yet.
Well, you know, I save in silver. I think everybody should be saving in silver. It's the best investment. I bought in when it was like $16 an ounce, $15 an ounce.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I understand it's over $50 an ounce, and it's going to go up, and it may even overtake gold for a short period of time. And if that happens, then I'll sell all my silver.
If that happens, shots are already being fired.
well, it'll only overtake it because of there's not enough on the market, and they can't produce enough to, it's a shortage, and it'll adjust itself eventually, okay? But there'll be a temporary shortage, and again, if that were to happen, if silver was to overtake gold, I would take my silver and buy gold. And because gold will eventually find itself back, and silver will find itself as an underlink, you know, the proper ratio between gold and silver is 20-1. If you go back into, before the 20th century, okay, at the beginning of the 20th century, and I did a paper on this. In fact, let me open the paper up on this. So you can find this under Starter Committee of Safety. Come down to Handbooks, Videos, and Tools. And you come down a bit. Everybody should go through here because this lays out our plan and gives you all the handbooks and information on how to execute our plan. But if you come down here to instructional PDF documents. Okay, you'll see a paper in here that says, I think it's a quarter of a penny worth. Here it is, a three quarters of a penny worth. And it might even be worse than this now. But for instance, this lays out the difference in the prices, okay? You know, a loaf of bread used to cost 6 cents. Okay, a gallon of gas was 12 cents at the turn of the century, the 20th century. A gallon of milk, okay, 35 cents. You know, you could get an apartment, okay, in Manhattan, all right? An average, where's the apartments? I know there's have here. Here it is, a choice apartment on 125th Street, 125th East 93rd Street, between Park and Lexington. That's a great neighborhood. An apartment was $125, okay? A three-bedroom apartment in the same building was $165. You know, you pay $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a month for an apartment down there in that area. But that's what it was when gold and silver had its proper value. And there was no such thing as inflation until the Federal Reserve came to be, you know? Let's see, what else? A good dinner in a nice restaurant cost about $1, okay? The average yearly income in 1913 was $1,296. That's $24.92 a week. And that was good money. Okay.
Today, so 30 to 50 bucks could definitely get you a good meal today.
Well, look at an ounce of silver, okay, was 1/120th of an ounce of gold. It took 20 silver dollars to make one ounce of gold, okay? So an ounce of gold was a $20 piece, okay? So a $20 piece is an ounce of gold. It took 20 silver dollars to make an ounce of gold, okay? If you go down into the city, you know, Bronx, for instance. I was raised in the Bronx. And, you know, most of the apartment buildings down there, you go into the apartment buildings and you enter into this big hall, okay, high ceilings, okay, slate or tiles. Everything's, you know, great woodwork, beautiful woodwork. And these are just apartment buildings where people live in the Bronx, okay? I mean, a lot of it's destroyed by these days. But when I was a kid, you know, they were in pretty good shape. Maybe they're still in good shape now. I don't know. I haven't been down there in a while. But, apartments were beautiful, okay, in the Bronx, okay? High-quality construction, you know? And you pay. I remember I paid my first apartment when I came out of the service, okay? My friend's father had an apartment, three-bedroom apartment, and he had moved, okay? He had remarried and moved. But he kept that apartment because it was under rent control. It was $85 a month, okay? So when I came out of the service, and my friend came out at the same time, I had met him overseas, and we got an apartment together with a couple other people, you know, we took that apartment, $85 a month we were paying for a three-bedroom apartment, and that was in 1973, you know, but that was under rent control. Apartments, when I had moved from there, I don't remember what I paid, maybe $200 for an apartment for a two-bedroom, you know, I don't remember, but whatever.
Unheard of.
Today it's thousands. I mean, where I live right now, you know, a one-bedroom apartment is $1,500 to $2,000 a month, you know?
Yeah. And low quality, too, yeah.
Low quality, yes. So.
And the final little tidbit on my closing is I do have, funny enough, I do have a court date tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
They in my reality, which I believe is a normal reality, a municipality stole my car while I was, you know, using the common ways.
Uh-huh.
And it's been basically impounded for like 80 something days now. And so I've been, I sent them a fee.
What was the charge on that?
There's four charges, all of which have directly to, first off, to do with registration. So if the theory is, if registration doesn't stick, none of the other three will stick. And according to the New Jersey statutes, Article Title 39, Chapter 3, Section 4 states that all residents and non-residents must register their car. I don't claim to be a resident or a non-resident, so that's problem number one. And number two is that in the beginning of that chapter, Section 1, it states the exceptions to the provisions of this chapter, which if you're not using your conveyance for the transportation for hire, pleasure, or business, that you could essentially ignore the provisions of this chapter, which is registration and everything else.
Well, they play a game and they give you a registration instead of certificate of ownership. You know, when you buy a car, if you buy it new, you can demand a certificate of ownership and you'll have a stronger case there. But nevertheless, the whole thing's a fraud anyway. It has nothing to do with you because we're under law.
There's an exception in their own statutes. The exception is commerce, is basically buyer, pleasure, business, which none of the three I was involved in. And
no, but
that's,
they're just making all that stuff up anyway. It doesn't matter. The bottom line is they took your property without due process, and I'd sue them for that. So I would sue them for denial, for taking my property without due process and for a denial of due process. And I would take it into the state court first, but you better be good at writing papers. You know, I've been back and forth in it with a case similar. Well, it's not this kind of a case, but it's a case where I moved it. Well, it is. It was a traffic violation, okay? But they didn't take my vehicle. And I moved it into state court for denial of due process. What a big hassle I had with that. They kept reinterpreting what my meanings were. I was very clear with my meanings, changing my jurisdictions. I mean, all this stuff. I went through back and forth, numerous papers. You know, this clown, this lawyer, they're liars. Every single lawyer is a liar. They're liars, okay?
Yeah,
and I can show me their papers and I'll prove that they're liars. They make this stuff up, okay? So anyway, you know, I'm battling the same thing, and so I've been back and forth with this, but I'm ready to go if I have to. I'm going to take it to federal court. I'm going to take it up the line to the appellate court first, see where I go, then I'll take it up the line to the other. But I'm suing the original court. I'm suing the judge and the prosecutor for denial of my due process. They fined me. They didn't have the power authority to fine me. They took my money. That's my property. They threatened me with jail if I didn't give it. If I was caught driving, they were going to take away my
certificate.
Well, no, my plates. They were going to take my plates away. Okay.
They seized my plates as well, according to the police.
Yeah, so I had to pay the extortion fee. I paid the extortion fee. So I want my $300 back. Okay, that's to begin with. I want my $300 back.
They wouldn't release my car to me. I went to go get it. They wouldn't release it because they forced me to try to get insurance, which, again, it falls under the provisions of that chapter.
Well, if you better be careful, because if you're driving, you're going to want to have insurance unless you have money to be able to support any kind of an accident you might have. So, I mean, that could be problematic. Not that they can force you to do that, but you should have some kind of backing. Most people can't back that up while you buy insurance.
Bond should do. State-recognized conveyance
bond. Bond is fine. That'll do it. But the thing is with my case, though, I sued both the judge and the prosecutor, both for $2,000 apiece in Morgan silver dollars face value. I was very clear with that. So right now, when I sued them in the beginning, I think it was like $20 an ounce, or maybe $18 an ounce. Now it's up to $50 an ounce. So that, and I want my silver dollars face value. But Morgan silver dollars,
I went with the path of writing up a contract, since I believe that what they're trying to do is force a contract with me. I didn't give them permission, but
no, I wouldn't go that route. Go to violation of rights. It's much more powerful.
Yeah.
When they took your car away, did they take you to court and did a jury decide to take your vehicle away from you, your property?
No.
They denied you due process, didn't they? They took that is a requirement of the day of the law. Okay, it's a violation of what, your Seventh Amendment? Okay.
Your assumptions, yeah.
and the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment. I mean, due process is a requirement, okay? And a jury trial is a requirement. And it's under the law, under the rules of common law. That's the Seventh Amendment.
Also, I have my rights reserved for when I had my driver's license.
You have your rights reserved. They can't be taken away from you. You can't sell them. You can't give them away. You can decide not to exercise them. That's a silly thing, but that's the only thing. Other than that, you don't have to reserve your rights. Your rights are always reserved. They cannot. There's nothing they could do. There's no paper you can sign. There's no sneaky trap that they can do that they can lawfully say, you gave up your rights. No, you don't ever. You can't give up your rights. It's an impossibility. They're unalienable. They come from God. Only God can take them away. God usually, if he's going to take them away from you, he takes you out of this world. That's the only way he usually takes your rights away. But no man can take your right away. No man can fool you into signing them away. It can't be done. It's an impossibility. So, look, stand on the law, the natural law, God's law, because it's too powerful. And look, in the state level, they're really stupid, and they're a little more frightened than the federal level. Federal levels, they're just pure evil, in my opinion. But the state level, they're evil, too, but they're a little frightened of different things. And if you don't have the fixer in there, because they seem to have a lot of fixers, judges who they'll put in a place because they're willing even to go to jail, whatever, you know. We call them the fixers. But in any event,
to district court, and the district court of New Jersey, you might have to go there.
Well, what court are you in?
I'm in a flimsy, nimsy, nissy Prius.
Well, you've got to move out of there. Look, once they deny your due process, you got to move it into a place where you can get due process. And the only place you can get due process is in the state court. Even though they've closed the courts of justice, you can open them up and go through the whole process of exercising your rights. If you write your papers right and good enough and you lay out your case right and good enough, it will frustrate the judge a little bit. You might even get justice because they might get a little frightened because they realize certain things. They don't know as much of what to do than the judges on the federal level. They are more highly educated, but the state level, not so much. At least that's been my experience. I frustrate all the judges I ever go before.
Is it then the district court I need to move to, or is it the Supreme Court of New Jersey? Because I don't think they're going to give me my car back. That's the ultimate issue here.
Well, yeah, you have a right. Sue them for your property. That's your property. You have a right. They're going to try to make the case that you don't own it because you have a registration and you don't have the certificate of ownership. Okay?
No, I don't have registration on it.
What do you mean you don't have registration on it? You do have the title?
I have the title, yes.
Okay, well, that's the key, is your title. Okay, so you have the title. Okay, yeah. You own that car. Okay, they're going to play a game that title is not a certificate of owner. Well, I think it's called a certificate of ownership. I think that's what it's actually called. I know I wrote a note on this when we were talking. Not, I guess I didn't. Okay, anyway, it's a certificate of ownership. But look at that, all that's a con job, okay, to begin with. They hide that from you, number one. They refuse to give it, number two. You could push the issue if you bought it brand new off the dealer. You can push the issue and threaten with, look, if you're not going to give me a certificate of ownership, I'm going to go to another dealership to buy my car. And they will work to try to get it for you, maybe. I don't know, but I would imagine they would because they want the sale. But, and I think by law, if you ask for it and require it and demand it, you get it. Anything more than that, that they turn that title into something other than that, because that's what they did, well, that's fraud.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with the golden rule, is I interpret it as the ownership of that car. I hold.
Absolutely. Look, anything less than that is fraud. What are you talking about? What's this secret law going on? What's going on? How many people know about this? I certainly never heard about it. Have you ever heard about it? You know, they make this stuff up, okay? But you can make a good battle. You can frustrate the court. Sometimes, depending on the judge, you might even be able to win a case, you know? It's difficult to win because they don't like to give you a win.
In closing, what is your suggestion for the court I should move to, if it's not the after the
minute? Look, in New York here, we have the courts, which are nisi prius courts. They can only hear
spaces of equity, and that, of course, is your town courts, your village courts, and your city courts. They can only hear cases of equity, with the exception of New York City courts here in New York State. New York City courts, they put into the Constitution that they are courts of law. It's called courts of record. Okay, but we have then the state court, and our state court is called the Supreme Court, New York State Supreme Court. So every county has a New York State Supreme Court in it. So it's New York State Supreme Court, Dutchess County, New York State.
I will go to a Supreme Court, not a district court. I think the district court has to do with the federal issues, which this is.
Yeah, that sounds like federal courts, maybe the district courts. I don't know how your state is set up. I was kind of perplexed trying to figure this out early on, that other states designed or formed differently than they are in New York. But we have the New York State Supreme Court. Every county has a New York State Supreme Court in it. Okay, so it's identified by a county. Then we have the appellate court, the Court of Appeals. And then from there, we can move it if we have the ability. If there's a right violation, you move it into federal court and move up that line. But federal courts can only hear constitutional violation issues. They can't hear any kind of an issue on and taking your property without due process. That's a constitutional issue.
That's the right. I think a district court is the right move.
So you start off with the state. The reason why you want to start off with the state is because if they don't give you, you've got more chances to go into the court to fight. Okay, for instance, look, I took my court from a town court into the New York State Supreme Court. I'm still in New York State Supreme Court. I know I'm probably going to have to appeal this case. They're kind of, you know, dragging their rear ends on this because they don't know how to deal with my paperwork at this point. At least I believe that's the case. So in any event, if they give me a negative decision, I'm going to give them a notice of appeal, and then I'm going to file an appellate court. And then so there's a court of appeals, and there's the appellate court. There's two levels to go up the line, okay, to challenge the decision of a lower court. And then from there, if I don't get justice, so you have one shot, two shot, three shots in the state courts, and then you get two or three shots in the federal courts. Okay? So you have six shots at this if you go to the state first and then into the federal.
Okay,
because
so the state
has as much as a duty as the federal courts is to acknowledge and support your unalienable rights to allow you to have that be defended by them.
So the game plan is whenever things are getting out of hand or they can't hear your case, you just automatically motion to appeal to the next court.
Well, once they make the decision that is negative to what I'm looking for, that's when you go to the next step. So they'll eventually make a decision on the case, and then you go to the next step.
Costs, but I guess we.
But what you got to do is you got to be careful, and this is the big problem that you have. You got to keep your case nice and clean and simple. You can't fill it with a lot of, just different things and stories and stuff. You keep your affidavit, you do a sworn statement on your original paper, is the opening case where you open a court of record and you file a case against the individual. Keep it short and sweet. You make your certain statements. If you have to expound on them you maybe put memorandums of law attachment, you refer to that for a further appreciation of the statement of law that you made or whatever the case may be. And you keep it simple. Okay, what happens is the lawyer on the other side, the prosecutor or the lawyer on the other side, defending them. Well, it wouldn't be a prosecutor necessarily, but they have their own defense because you're suing them. You got to sue them. So that lawyer on that other side is going to throw everything at you. You didn't serve it right. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. And they just fill the paper. They fill their paper up with all kinds of garbage that you have to defend, and that becomes a problem. So you got to keep everything really simple. As a matter of fact, I would always use the sheriff to serve. Because then that's one thing out. They can't argue that, so they can't say they wouldn't serve properly. So they have to come at you from another way. they'll try to change your jurisdiction. If you don't understand the words that they're using, they'll change your jurisdiction, move you to Article 78, and you're out of there. Because the Article 78 brings you into a civil law court, an equity court, and the whole thing is built around protecting the state and on the people working for the state. And they're gonna, and if you don't follow through their statutory process and procedures, then they just throw the case out, you lose. So you have to be very careful. And any language, every word, any phrase that they use, if you don't understand it, get your Black's Law Dictionary out and understand it completely what they're talking about. And if they bring cases in, you have to talk. I have an affidavit, I mean a memorandum up there you can download. You took the course? Are you taking our course?
Yeah, I've completed three or four sections of the course.
I'm talking about the court access and the common law course. Have you taken that one?
Yeah, to my memory.
Yeah, that's the one that costs $125. We teach you how to go to court. We teach you about the law, due process, all that stuff. But in any event, in there you find things, and you'll find memorandums anyway on our site. You'll find it in the book. You'll find it all over the place. But we have memorandums. One of the memorandums is the difference between common law and comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. That's what they call common law, which is trial court decisions. Okay, and there is a maxim at law that states a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. Just because that case is similar to my case, it's not the same in my case. It holds no water. It means nothing in my case. Besides that, all you're doing is going to trial court decisions, which have no hold up in law at all. You know, those lower courts don't make law at all in their decisions. You know, that has to be the higher courts where that happens. But in any event, they'll call that common law. And what I've learned, and I should have learned this a long time ago, but I learned recently to do this now. I don't even use the word common law no more in court. I use natural law. And I refer to the Declaration of Independence, the laws of nature and of nature's God. That's the law I'm under. That's the law that says that's in the Constitution, the word law, L-A-W. And if you go into Black's Law, it's law that proceeds according to the common law as it was in England.
Yeah.
When we became a nation, and it refers to the laws of nature and of nature's God. It's held up in the Declaration of Independence. That is clear. It's not comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, which is, again, the decisions of trial courts. It has nothing to do with me. Okay?
Yeah.
So, again, you have to be very careful to understand everything they're saying when these lawyers write back in their papers. I've had them where they've changed my index number, and they changed the paperwork to say that I'm an Article 78 court, when I was clear that this is a common law case, trial by jury, and they just changed the jurisdiction, and the judge is going along with this, and I have to bring it up and say, wait a second, that's fraud. They changed. I get to decide. I'm the one that filed the case. They're the defendant, okay? And I get to choose what jurisdiction we're in, and I'm not in your jurisdiction. I'm in my jurisdiction, the jurisdiction of law.
Yeah, I don't plan on entering their jurisdiction tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you got to be careful. You got to go. You got to understand the words and get into paper writing, okay?
Yeah.
All right, but anyway, we're at the end of our program. We're over time, so.
Appreciate your time today, John. Thank you so very much.
Okay, thanks for the call. All right, with that, we're going to end our program for the night. Good night, everybody, and Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night.